You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. The herd mentality that assumes university is the only path to reaching one's full potential has come under fire in recent years. Student loan debt and the interest on that debt is rising, and yet a university degree certainly seems to be no guarantee of securing decent, highly skilled jobs. I'm Madeline Grant, Digital Officer at the IEA, and today I'm joined by editorial fellow Len Shackleton. We discuss whether Britain's love affair with higher education is sustainable, and whether students are getting a raw deal from their time at university. We also examine ways in which the university funding model could be reformed to create better outcomes for students and the wider economy. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to our podcast channel, IEA Conversations. Over the last few years, particularly with the advent of higher tuition fees, the debate around the quality and the viability of our current higher education system has really intensified. My first question is, are we sending too many people to university?
Most of those who've been to university, in fact, most of the people listening to this will have been to university, will agree that we got something out of the experience. On the other hand, of course, higher education is highly subsidised, despite the student loans and so forth. And whether the government should be subsidising quite so many people to go to university is perhaps a question we could talk about.
Since the new Labour target of getting half of all students into higher education, successive governments seem to have pursued this policy with no end in sight. And it does arguably start to resemble something of an arms race. Once you have a degree becomes the norm, you need a degree to get basic jobs that you didn't used to require a degree for. Therefore, in order to distinguish yourself from that group, you then have to have a master's degree, and then the process continues. Now, this all seems instinctively a very unsustainable system.
I think you're right. Brian Kaplan's new book, which you may have read on this, makes this point very strongly, that the higher education system is very largely a system of signalling, which enables you to demonstrate that you're trainable, that you turn up on time, that you meet your deadlines and things like this. But the actual skill content which is imparted is very limited in some areas, at least. Clearly in areas like engineering, medicine, etc., yes, there is a very important skill part. But if you look at the softer social sciences, for example, the humanities, then it's much less clear that this is preparation for work as such.
And that didn't used to be a problem until quite recently, I don't think.
It's a scale of things, isn't it, yeah. Maddie? You know, that when you were sending 2 or 3 or 4% of the age group to university, you could afford this kind of indulgence, if you like. We now have virtually reached the Labour target of roughly 48-49% of people aged 18 to 30 will have been to university by the time they reach the age of 30. I mean, that's a great achievement in many ways, but it does raise the question, you know, where do you draw the line? People are now talking of maybe we should have 70% of people.
Why not send everyone to university?
Will university mean the same thing? Clearly, what goes on in degree programmes has changed a great deal. Because we now take in a much wider range of abilities, the first year of university degrees has become more or less nugatory. I mean, there's no proper examinations in many institutions. Most of the work is essentially remedial, getting people up to a level where they can actually engage with the subject properly. That's understandable. But, you know, where do you draw the line on this? There's been grade inflation as well, which I think most people are aware of.
I think some of us may have benefited from
it. Well, indeed, many people may have benefited from this. But we're now in a situation where, on one measure, 75% of people who complete their degrees get a first or a 2-1. A situation where, as you were saying before, it's a kind of arms race. A degree is no longer enough. You've got to have a master's. From a kind of wider social perspective, is it sensible to go down that route?
Not least because the further it goes, the more vested interests there are. There are universities that prop up their numbers that wouldn't normally have been able to prop up their numbers, perhaps, that have an interest in maintaining the status quo. Employers perpetuate it by asking for the degree that they didn't used to ask the degree for. And because it's all so interconnected, it's hard to know where you would actually begin to unravel the system that we've created.
Yes, indeed. As this process has speeded up, it's meant that older people, perhaps people returning to the workforce, find it more difficult to access jobs. The thing I've drawn attention to elsewhere is the way in which social work, which once drew upon a wide range of people of different backgrounds, ex-army people, people who've been in the police or in schools or whatever, could retrain as a social worker. Now, essentially, you have to have a degree. if
you policing as well.
Pardon?
The Royal College of Policing as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're moving towards everybody on the beat should have a degree. A rather strange idea, but there you are.
I think another reason that a lot of students feel that they're getting a raw deal, even though taken as a whole, as an average, graduates earn more than non-graduates, that's indisputable, there is still a very large proportion of graduates that end up doing non-graduate work and that actually persists. Of course, they're paying ever more for the privilege of all of this.
Well, I do think students get a bad deal in many ways. I'm not so sure about the question of student loans. I mean, I think student loans have been rather badly presented. They're essentially a rather odd form of graduate tax. Yes, I mean, what is the point of going to university? Many people see it as leading to better paid jobs and so forth. For many people, that is the case. But as you say, there are other people who may not be so lucky in the jobs market. One of the things about our higher education system is it was designed for a much smaller group of people. Long holidays, for example, you know, the classic year at Oxford involves
8 weeks.
three 8-week terms. And the third term isn't even 8 weeks, you know, because you don't get the teaching, you know, you're revising and stuff like that. Long vacations when you can go back to your country house. This is crazy. It's a wasteful system. It's got huge vested interests. Staff who are not really interested in teaching undergraduates very often, they're much more interested in their research, going to conferences, etc. Students are an inconvenience. People who say, oh, at last it's over. The term is over, we've now got 12 weeks off. Compared with the work experience of most people, universities are very odd places indeed.
Yeah, not the best training for
not
the working
best,
world.
Not the best training for
very
work.
Often, I think, yeah. Something of a baptism of fire when graduates enter the realm of work.
It's a rather cruel thing, but David Cameron, of course, was called the SA Crisis Prime Minister. And indeed, you could argue that Oxbridge-type education is based on essay crises, you know, bits of intensive work, but being able to blag your way through on native intelligence. And that really isn't a training for the kind of work which we need in the 21st century.
Nor
it may be a training for politicians, but for nobody else.
But even then, that's not the desirable politician, because the whole point of the essay crisis mode is that it entirely relies on bluff and bluster and all style and no substance. We talked about the issue of funding and our students getting a bad deal. In many ways, taxpayers are getting the worst deal of all, because if the fees are raised to such a level that the majority of it can't be paid off, the data on this, the IFS believes that around 3/4 of current graduates are unlikely to ever repay their loan in full. Even if it's anywhere close to that, the taxpayer becomes liable for a huge amount of money. Are there ways in which we could change the structure and the way that we repay loans in order to lead to better outcomes, perhaps?
I think the fundamental problem with the student loan system is that the people who make decisions about letting students come to university don't bear the costs of doing so. Universities have got, you know, no skin in the game. Essentially, they can take as many people as they want. They can churn out with a degree which may or may not be of much use to the students. And if it's not of much use to them, if they're not well prepared for the labour market, there's no comeback. There's no comeback. So I'm interested in schemes like that put forward by Peter Ainsworth, which the IEA has publicised, which involve universities being partners in a loan scheme. That is to say, you would pay back your fees at least in part to the university. And of course, if you weren't successful in the labour market, the university wouldn't get any money. At the moment, the university is just paid by the government for everybody who comes through the door. And I think there's moral hazard in that kind of situation.
Yeah, it incentivises precisely the kind of raw deal that we've talked about, where it's all about seeing how many students you can cram into a lecture theatre, how little contact time you can give for the largest number of students who are all paying the same amount of money.
And then, of course, Maddie, because this creates these kind of problems, the government then has to intervene. And so we've got this extraordinary apparatus now, the Office for Students, which seems to be interfering in all sorts of areas, because the incentives are all wrong. You can't trust universities to do what they want, because what they want isn't necessarily in the public interest. What we need is the government much further out of it than it currently is. Much more comeback on universities themselves. They don't get the money unless they produce students who are useful to society or who get some positive benefit from it.
There are many people that would say that that's not the point of a university, that it's not just about pure societal good and what you can put back into the economy. There is an intrinsic benefit to education Is there not a danger that education could become stratified so that we only value things that are deemed kind of useful?
Turn it round a bit and we could say, yes, people go to university to enjoy themselves, to study things which they're interested in. And in that sense, it's kind of part the entertainment or the leisure industries or something like that. In which case, why aren't people paying for it themselves in a sense? We pay for other high culture things in order to justify huge public subsidies for it. There are real externalities here. There are real spillover benefits from this cultural appreciation. There may be some of that, and certainly it feeds over into a vibrant arts sector, culture sector, and you could certainly justify some degree of subsidy on those grounds. But on the scale we have at the moment and the kind of subjects which are people are studying, you know, one of the biggest undergraduate degree programs is in the area of business studies. Now, I've taught business studies for many years and it's very, very important in many ways, but I don't believe there's any great spillover of externalities to the rest of society. The benefits, such as they are, go to the individuals themselves. And if universities don't produce good business studies degrees which actually produce these benefits, then they shouldn't be in that market. The question of the wider cultural benefits of education, I think, refer to a subset of higher education, not necessarily a very big subset.
In some cases, then, would it make sense, if we are valuing education in a more kind of utilitarian way, to subsidise particular courses, ones where there might be a more of a clear economic need for them or potentially a skills shortage in that particular area?
For many years, successive governments have privileged STEM subjects. But these aren't necessarily the areas in which jobs are going to be found in the future. And indeed, the earnings of people in some of these degree programmes are not necessarily that much better than general earnings for graduates. Because there's always a shortage of students coming forward, in many universities, entrance standards have dropped. So the quality of students studying STEM subjects is not that great.
I quickly want to touch on access and social mobility, which is plaguing many of our elite universities at the moment. I don't think there are easy solutions to this problem. It almost seems to be a case of shooting the messenger to blame universities. It may be that what they're reflecting is the preponderance of substandard state schools. What would be your prescriptions for encouraging social mobility at universities?
So we want to encourage students who've got the ability and interest in studying to get into universities which they would benefit from. You know, if we look at the data, then clearly the intake of the Russell Group universities, Oxbridge, etc., are not ideal in the sense that they tend to recruit from a fairly limited group of people. That's partly the way in which people in schools don't encourage young people with talent to really go for it. I mean, you hear stories of people being actually discouraged from applying to Oxford or somewhere because they'll be unhappy there, where people won't be like them, and so on. You know, you need a positive attitude towards getting people in, but how far you can do this by some kind of formula? Universities are being pressured by the Office for Students to lower entrance qualifications to people from disadvantaged backgrounds. There are difficulties with that, you know, whether the people you get in are genuinely disadvantaged because you often use some indicator like which area they came from, whether they got free school meals or something like that, which are not necessarily a good proxy for real disadvantage because people's circumstances vary a great deal. It is, I think, slightly worrying that this has become such an issue for governments. It's reminiscent of the Soviet education system, where, you know, if your father was a worker, then you stood a better chance of getting in than if parents were from the bourgeoisie. This may sound like it's social justice, but, you know, the corollary of that is somebody else may be being disadvantaged by this process. So I think it's something governments, I can quite understand why governments are concerned about this. But like you, I think the real problem is in schools. It's not in universities. Universities are very keen to take talented people. You know, what they should be very careful about is taking people who are not quite as talented just because they come from some disadvantaged background. I think that's the problem.
If you were to bring in some kind of affirmative action policy with a very well-designed proxy and you were to, say, let someone in who was on free school meals with, say, we're talking a Russell Group university that would normally ask for 3 A's, if they're happy to take 2 A's and a B, I would say that that person is probably a lot more talented than a lot of the private school kids who've been through a well-polished system.
Well, the problem with that, it's kind of helicopter parenting or something, isn't it? Or the state is looking down and saying, yeah, we'll change the rules for you because we judge you to be sufficiently disadvantaged to require this kind of support. It's kind of top-down kind of thinking in a way. Let's look more at the incentives which face young people about going into education. Let's look at the social background. Some ethnic groups, it's very difficult to get that kind of social mobility thing going. If you're, let's say, a young woman from a traditional Muslim background living in Birmingham or something, your parents are not going to like you going to Exeter to study English literature, right? Or whatever it may be. There are difficulties of that kind. I mean, one of the things I've also complained about in the past is the way in which the emphasis on getting more and more people into higher education is undervalued part-time degrees. 20 or 30 years ago, there was a very large contingent of people studying part-time in their local community and getting a degree. And often these students were wonderful to teach because they were really, really committed to what they wanted to do. That is vanishing. We're only about 4% of students are now part-time on degree programmes. The Open University is in crisis because of the funding has collapsed because people are doing full-time degrees rather than part-time degrees. So I think we need a much more flexible system rather than saying, let's get everybody into Oxbridge-style degrees. One size fits all, basically.
Thank you. For more podcasts, blogs, reports and films, go to our website, iea.org.uk.